This is Watson Davis speaking from Washington. It's too soon to tell whether this piece of news is important for all time, but streptomycin, the chemical from mold, may provide a stopgap treatment for tuberculosis. It's not a cure, but our most authoritative report this week tells us that it stops the germs in the human body, although it does not wipe them out. Given for a period of months, streptomycin may hold the germs at bay until other treatments and the patient's own resistance get the chance to cure the disease. And that's the top science news of the week, in my opinion.
For other up-to-the-minute news from the world of science, listen now as Columbia presents Adventures in Science with Watson Davis, Director of Science Service and Columbia Science Editor. In a minute or two, you'll hear about what chemistry is doing these days. Now, Mr. Davis, more science highlights?
Well, Mr. Taylor, when the two governments of the Irish Republic and the Northern Ireland agree on anything, it's news even if it is a telescope to view the heavens from South Africa. A new type of telescope will be erected at Harvard Observatory Station in South Africa through the international cooperation among the governments of ERA and Northern Ireland and Harvard University. The telescope's a new design by Dr. James G. Baker of Harvard, and an adaptation of the well-known Schmidt camera. Schmidt telescopes combine a thin correcting plate or lens and a spherical mirror. Dr. Baker's design adds another mirror to the system, producing a flat field instead of the curved field. Thus is eliminated the necessity for curving the photographic plates. And the area of the sky to be covered by the Baker-Schmidt camera is more than 100 times as large as that of an ordinary reflecting telescope. Now there's a jukebox system for ordering meals. A box with a row of buttons enables you to select which tune you'd like to hear from a jukebox. The same system is now adapted for ordering your meal, and it's patented this week. Four food assortments listed on the menu would have numbers corresponding to those on a keyboard, like that of an adding machine or a dial resembling that on your telephone. You'd just push the button or twirl the dial. The order would be printed by a machine at the other end of the line out in the kitchen. This would cut down the number of trips the waitress needs to make, and it would eliminate mistakes due to hasty handwriting or poor memory. There are two prime questions being asked just now. One is, can the destructiveness of the atomic bomb be put under effective control so as to prevent war? The other, will atomic energy supply commercial power in competition with coal, oil, and other fuels? Here's a partial answer to the second one. The report on the cost of nuclear power issued by the United Nations Atomic Energy Commission showed that a large power plant fueled with uranium would produce power almost as cheaply as a conventional coal power plant. Relative costs would be lower if the cost of coal power continues an upward trend and the solving of technical problems in atomic power plants continues. Football is occupying attention on Saturday afternoon, so for a few weeks, this time will not be available to this program. If you want to know when Adventures in Science will resume, send me a letter or postcard so I can tell you shortly before the time of the first new program, probably in December.
Now, Mr. Davis, what's our adventure in science today?
I attended the largest post-war meeting of American chemists held in Chicago during the past week. It was one of the largest chemical expositions the world has ever seen. One of the key persons among the many thousands who attended is the National Secretary of the American Chemical Society, the largest chemical organization in the world. He is Mr. Alden H. Emery, and I've invited him to be our guest to tell us what happened at Chicago and what he sees in the future for chemistry. To hear Mr. Emery, Adventures in Science takes you now to Chicago.
This is Chicago. Dick Faulkner speaking. Mr. Emery, this was one of the biggest meetings of the American Chemical Society, wasn't it?
Yes, indeed. As a matter of fact, this 110th meeting of the Society was one of the largest ever held. All told, approximately 9,000 chemists, chemical engineers, and industrialists from all parts of the United States and a few from foreign countries attended. The registrants represented just part of the Society's more than 48,000 members. In 5 days of morning and afternoon sessions, 749 scientific papers were read and discussed. At times, 15 or more sessions were in progress simultaneously.
Hey, that's a terrific number of speeches. They must have covered many subjects.
They certainly did. Chemistry touches every phase of modern life. Results of new research were presented in fields that included nutrition, biology, petroleum, rubber, fertilizers, plastics, and sugar, among a long and varied list. Chemical science is growing continually, always expanding. This program was the largest we ever had, partly because chemists and chemical engineers now can report details of many of their outstanding contributions to victory in the war. A large number of these developments still were classified as top secret only a short time ago.
That sounds interesting. Can you tell us about some of them?
Gladly. Perhaps the best news is that many of these developments, accomplished under the spur of war necessity, are now at work for new and better things in peacetime. One of the wartime accomplishments was a dramatic triumph over fluorine, a wild and often dangerously reactive element, which for decades defied efforts to harness it to man's directed use. When the war broke out, we were able to produce only a few pounds of fluorine a day. But the war industries needed tons of it. And tons were produced by development of better methods to make pure fluorine by electrolysis and of special containers in which to store it. Fluorine was necessary for the atomic bomb project. Now it promises to bring us a great new expansion in chemistry through man-made combinations with other chemicals. Better textiles, insecticides, plastics, and paints are only a few of the new products foreseen. Another is a lubricating oil so stable that engines can be redesigned for automobiles which will operate more efficiently.
Then we can look forward to fluorine as a new source of industry.
Oh, yes. It will bring that. Really, we have one now. But this will expand tremendously with further research and development. Another group of reports was devoted to radiation chemistry. Radioactive or tagged atoms are being put to work to find answers to problems of nutrition, of growth, of structure, of disease. Still another symposium dealt with the contributions of organic chemistry to the war effort. These included chemical warfare problems, the development of insecticides to whip the insect enemy, the chemistry of explosives and the chemistry of synthetic rubber, which put and kept the military forces and the civilian population on wheels when the natural rubber supply was cut off. Now, synthetic rubber is available for many uses in civilian life. Another of the chemical victories in this war was the huge production of the life-saving penicillins.
Penicillin, that's one of the drugs grown by a mold, isn't it?
That's right. Methods of obtaining higher yields of better penicillins were reported to this meeting of the American Chemical Society. As you may know, there are different kinds of penicillins. Each penicillin differs in its ability to control different kinds of bacteria. The choice of mold and the medium or diet on which it grows determines what kinds of penicillins are made. The new research shows how the amount of a type of penicillin which is wanted can be increased by adding certain chemicals to the medium or food. It was also found that these chemicals increased the total amount of penicillin produced by the mold. Thus, more penicillin can be made, and the penicillin can be custom-built, so to speak, to contain more of a particular type of penicillin most effective against a certain germ.
Then, Mr. Emery, penicillins can be made to order to fight disease.
Yes, and this research was but one of the new steps toward maintaining better health and preventing disease. Another very interesting report demonstrated the way to a shortcut in the recovery of convalescents from disease or injury.
Is this shortcut in recovery achieved through a new drug?
No, indeed. It's a question of diet. The shortcut method was found in the treatment of the starved victims of German concentration camps and German prison camps. It is reported that the recovery of these starvation victims could be speeded up by a diet high in proteins. The sources of proteins used were powdered milk and eggs and other materials from equally common sources. A simple and inexpensive diet that can be made to taste like eggnog or ice cream. This high-protein diet brought the starvation cases to health much more quickly than had been thought possible before. And after wounds or operations, it is said that the high-protein diet reduced the recovery period by as much as one-third in many instances. In peacetime application, this will mean a shorter stay in the hospital and a quicker return to health.
Proteins are getting considerable attention these days, aren't they, Mr. Emery?
Indeed they are. Many of the papers concern the chemistry of proteins and of amino acids, the building blocks of which proteins are composed. These amino acids are now being made synthetically and from natural sources to help in nutrition. The body can make some of the amino acids, but not others. And the body must receive these essential ones in food. Chemistry slowly is getting closer to determining the structure of proteins, advancing toward the goal of being able to make them synthetically. Some new progress in this respect also was presented to this week's meeting. Incidentally, another study showed that cheaper cuts of beef are just as good or better than the choicer cuts as a source of amino acids. They just aren't as tender.
What about vitamins? Are there any new developments in vitamins?
Yes, vitamins are under constant study, both to determine their content in various foods and how the body utilizes them. New reports also were made on the effects of vitamin deficiencies.
Then the human machine certainly is benefiting from progress in chemistry.
Yes, so are our mechanical machines. Wartime research brought us super aviation fuel, which is now powering our peacetime planes, and super fuel for our peacetime automobiles. This meeting of the American Chemical Society was told of new motor oils that last longer and make starting easier. These oils thin on cooling and thicken on heating.
Well, Mr. Emery, you remarked that chemistry touches every phase of modern life. What you have just told us gives us a pretty good idea of its range.
There's almost no limit. Foods and health have been given disproportionate attention in my remarks because of general interest in them. During the meeting, we also heard of advances toward better paints, varnishes, resins, and plastics. Antifungus agents have been developed for varnish and lacquer films, along with moisture-resistant coatings for metals. However, in talking about new developments, one must bear in mind that some of those to which reference has been made have not yet been translated into purchasable commodities. Some will require further research before they can be commercialized. We have merely lifted the curtain a little to let you see what the future may hold.
Apparently, our chemical laboratories have been busy and will be busy for a long time to come, then.
Yes, the chemical industry is continually expanding, and behind its progress lies thoughtful organization. To illustrate, A Session took up the construction and design of research laboratories, important because of the extensive expansion program upon which the industry will embark at the earliest possible moment. However, it is well to bear in mind that new laboratories and modern equipment by themselves are meaningless unless these expanded research facilities can be staffed with thoroughly competent and experienced men. No results will be forthcoming. If highly trained young research and production chemists and chemical engineers are taken by selective service for police duty in occupied countries, it is a foregone conclusion that the research on peacetime applications of wartime developments will be seriously delayed. Furthermore, the plans of the Army and Navy to expand their research programs will be critically handicapped. The American public must realize, even if some selective service officials do not, that indiscriminate drafting now of the young scientists who were deferred during the war means fewer jobs for our returned veterans and a serious impediment to progress towards strengthening the technologic defenses on which we must rely.
Thank you, Mr. Emery, for this report on chemistry in America today. We are confident that the chemists of America will continue to serve the nation with great effectiveness. Next week, due to the beginning of the football season and sports broadcasts, Adventures in Science will not be heard. This program will be heard next, 2 weeks from today on September the 28th, at a special time for that day, 4:45 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, when in connection with the Princeton Bicentennial, Mr. Davis will have as his guest Dr. C.C. Little of the Roscoe B. Jackson Memorial Laboratory at Bar Harbor, Maine. Meanwhile, if you would like to be notified as to when Adventures in Science programs will be resumed after the football season, just drop a postcard with your name and address upon it to Watson Davis, Science Service, Washington 6, D.C. You have been listening to Adventures in Science with Watson Davis, Director of Science Service and Columbia's Science Editor. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.